store. The S-T-O-R-E. Never mind.
At the JFK Center for Audiology, we understand how difficult it can be when someone you love has hearing loss. At JFK Medical Center, our experts can identify your hearing loss using advanced diagnostic testing, develop a plan of action to improve your hearing, and offer you the latest technology in advanced digital hearing aids. Take the first step to better hearing and a better quality of life. Call 732-321-7063 to schedule your comprehensive hearing evaluation. That's 732-321-7063. Or visit us at jfkaudiology.org.
The information provided in the following program is not a substitute for or intended to be medical advice. Medical advice can only be provided to you by your personal physician.
Welcome back to JFK Spotlight on Health. I am Bert Barron, and for today's program, we're going to talk about a very special relationship. In fact, a life-saving and life-giving relationship that JFK Medical Center has with a great New Jersey organization. And I'm hoping that you have heard of the Sharing Network by the time you're listening to this program. If not, you will be amazed at the incredible work that they've been doing here in New Jersey for a long time. Let's welcome in our first guest who is with us here today. He's the clinical donation specialist for the Sharing Network. He is Oscar Colon, who is with us here today. Oscar, welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me in your show, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to the public about organ and tissue donation.
I've been a fan of the Sharing Network for a long time. I've worked with the people over there for several years. But for maybe for someone who's hearing about the Sharing Network for the first time today, can you give us an overview of what the mission of the Sharing Network is?
Our mission is to save and enhance lives through the miracle of organ and tissue donation. We are a federally designated organ procurement agency, and we cover most of the state of New Jersey. And one of the hospitals that we cover is JFK Medical Center.
And it's important to have that that relationship with JFK Medical Center just simply for the work of organ donation and saving lives is what you guys do.
Correct. And JFK not only collaborates with us, but we have an effective collaboration between our organizations, to the point that last year JFK had 6 organ donors, and from that 13 lives were saved, and 22 tissue donors, which over 1,100 lives will be enhanced or saved through the miracle of tissue donation.
By the time we're done with this program, Oscar, people are going to have a different look and a different opinion of how organ donation works. Over the years, I've seen people just kind of who thought they knew how organ donation and the process of what it was that would become, they were signing up as soon as they possibly could because they believe so much in the mission. And we're going to have that impression on people today. The list, as they say, in New Jersey, how many people are waiting right now for organ donations in the state?
Well, in the state of New Jersey, there is almost 3,000 people waiting for a life-saving organ transplant. And currently in the United States, there's over 120,000 people that await an organ transplant. And of those, about an average of 17 to 21 die each day just waiting for that opportunity to have their lives saved. And from that, an average of 13, every 13 minutes, a new name is added to the national waiting list.
It's unbelievable. So by the time this program is over, 2 more names are going to be on that list by the time we reach the end of this show here.
Correct.
Unbelievable. And over 17 to 20 people every day die just simply because there isn't a match. There's not enough people who donate organs. Why is that number so high, Oscar?
There's not enough organs available for transplantation. And that's why our mission in our organization is to raise awareness of the need of organ donation and people to not only register through when they go to get their driver's license as an organ donor, but also to tell their families of what their wishes are if and when the time comes. Just to let you know, of all the deaths, less than 1% of people who die are able to donate organs for transplantation.
Why even that small a number? I thought that was a higher number than that.
No, unfortunately, by the time by the time you do the evaluation and the process of donation, a lot of the deaths are excluded. And in order for a person to be an organ donor, they have to, in most cases, be declared legally dead by neurological criteria, brain dead. And due to that, as well as if they have other conditions that would exclude them, that's why the number drops to less than 1%.
It's amazing. How does someone who is maybe listening now wants to maybe get more information about the Sharing Network, or they're curious about the process as to how it's done, what advice would you have for them there?
They can visit our website at www.NewJerseySharingNetwork.org for more information, or they could, at their local DMV offices, there should be literature regarding organ donation and how to register to become a donor. So that's our mission, is to educate the public on the need of organ donation.
That was one of the smartest things the state of New Jersey did, is when they got your literature in at the Motor Vehicle Commission and the DMV office, just to raise the awareness and give people the option to get more information. That was this state sometimes, but that was really a good thing to do. Has it been a good partnership with the state of New Jersey, Oscar?
It has been. Our state currently about, I would say, 45% of the people that have driver's license do have organ donation on their licenses, and we're trying to increase that number even higher.
That's a very good number, but yeah, you're right. We can move that up just a little bit more. And it goes far beyond organs. Even tissue donation can go a long way and really help a lot of people out as well.
Correct. When we talk about tissue donation, for somebody that can't see, they can receive a corneal transplant, or skin is used for burn victims, or for plastic reconstructions. Like, for instance, when a woman has a mastectomy due to cancer, they remove her breast. They can use donated skin to reconstruct a new breast. Bone can be used for trauma victims of car accidents, or for maxillofacial repairs. Also, bone is also used for cases of cancer of the bone. Instead of amputating the limb, they can actually transplant a whole piece of bone without the need of amputation. So there's many uses. Saphenous veins can be used for bypass surgery of the heart, as well as for dialysis access for patients who receive dialysis. So there's many, many uses for tissues.
And I try to tell people, you won't feel a thing. Don't worry about it. This is something that you're just kind of leasing this being, this vehicle that you walk around with. Don't you want to help somebody else when the time comes? That's what I try to impress upon people.
And you're absolutely right. Surveys have demonstrated that over 90% of the population agrees that that donation is a great thing to do. But when it comes down to make your own decision, it drops tremendously the number. So there's still some myths and misconceptions in the community that hopefully with programs such as yours and JFK, we're trying to debunk.
And I think we're going to go a long way today. We definitely are. We're going to welcome in a special guest coming up in the next segment. We're going to meet Dr. Cecil Matthews, who has an incredible, incredible story to share with us. And he's going to talk about that coming up in the next segment here on JFK Spotlight on Health. Before we wrap up this segment, Oscar, phone number and website one more time. And Facebook and Twitter, you do all that stuff too,
correct?
Right? Why don't you mention that?
Correct. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. And you can also visit our website at www.NewJerseySharingNetwork.org for more information.
All right, very good. Well, Dr. Cecil Matthews is going to join the conversation coming up here on this special edition of JFK Spotlight on Health, and what a story he has got to share. So we will welcome him coming up in just a few moments. Stay right there. Much more coming up on JFK Spotlight on Health. Welcome back to JFK Spotlight on Health. I'm joined this week by our friends from the New Jersey Sharing Network who are here. We have Oscar Colon, who is a clinical donation specialist with the Sharing Network, and I want to welcome in our other special guest who is here. We have Dr. Cecil Matthews, who is affiliated with JFK Medical Center, and what a story he has to share today. Dr. Matthews, welcome. It's great to have you on the show today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. It's so good to be here with you.
Please talk about your connection and your special story that you have with the Sharing Network.
Well, my story goes back to when I was doing my third year medical school, and I had to do some regular blood work to work in the dialysis unit as a student. And I found that they found that all my labs were totally abnormal. My liver enzymes were high. My blood count was low. And so they did a liver biopsy and found that I had cirrhosis. They did an enormous amount of workup at that time, but they couldn't find the reason why I had cirrhosis. Normally, it's from people who've taken unusual medications or alcohol or hepatitis, but I had none of these. And so they said that we would just have to watch you. And I was incredibly fortunate that I was able to finish my medical school, got married, did my residency, and had three children. And in 1995, when my wife was pregnant with my third child, at 5 months, it's the first time I ever became ill. By the time I'd already gotten into private practice, and I came down with gallbladder problems. And I was taken to Somerset Medical Center, and they did a what is called an ERCP, where they went in through my nose and into my gut and went into the duct that goes into the bile. And my gallbladder was full of stones due to excess bile, and they made a small incision, and it started draining. And when they went in to take the gallbladder out, they found that my liver was hard as a rock, and they couldn't find the gallbladder, and I started bleeding a bit. So they aborted the surgery, and in the meantime, I had already been in contact with the University of Pittsburgh Transplant Center. So I was taken by ambulance to Morristown Airport and airlifted by air ambulance to Pittsburgh, where I was in the ICU there for 3 days. By then, everything straightened out, and I was able to get back to baseline, and they said, go home and wait. So I came home, waited. Meantime, the OB friend of mine, obstetrician, who was taking care of my wife, decided that because I was waiting for the transplant, he would wait at 40 weeks and induce her so that we'd at least have that out of the way. So he picked the best 2 dates of my wife's due date and induced her, and my third son was born. And 2 months later, while I was attending a seminar at the Hyatt, a medical seminar at the Hyatt in New Brunswick, I got a call, and we rushed, went to the airport. I had a friend of mine who was the deputy chief of police at Newark. And so he took me in his car with the lights flashing. We rushed to Newark, and rushed to Pittsburgh, and overnight I had my transplant.
Wow. How long was that waiting period when you were told to just go home and wait to when you got that call that day in New Brunswick? What kind of time frame was that?
It was 6 months.
6 months.
Yes.
You had to be agonizing every single day. Talk about what you were feeling over those 6 months.
I kind of was, I did not really agonize because things become very mechanical and you kind of do things mechanically. During my medical school and during my residency, I had all the complications that you could expect with somebody with liver cirrhosis. I had very low blood. I had low platelets. I could bleed easy. I had varices. My spleen was enlarged, but thank God I never got sick a day in my life. So that in itself is a miracle. I never had a bleeding problem. I took care of people who are cirrhotics in the ICU and saw all the complications, but I was safe from all that. And so it became just we just trusted God and went from one step to the next.
Sounded like you felt okay. You were still able to kind of go about your life, but you knew you had this thing going on inside you.
For the most part, I felt okay. I was very tired. My skin had turned very dark. I was jaundiced. But for the most part, I functioned. Anybody looking at me wouldn't tell that I was sick. Yes.
Okay. And everything went fine with the transplant? And talk about what the recovery was like.
The transplant was amazing. That was the best place to go because they were pioneers in transplant surgery. Dr. Thomas Starzl is one of the world's leading pioneers of liver transplant. And they did some experimental stuff with me. For example, they gave me the bone marrow of the donor, which is not usually done. They were doing an experiment. I signed. I agreed to do that. And within a week, I was out of the hospital.
That's unbelievable. And how are you feeling today? How many years ago was this now?
That was, it'll be 21 years this September.
Unbelievable. And feeling great. Feeling great ever since?
I'm feeling great, yes.
Good for you. Had you ever thought about organ donation before this point and maybe you wanted to get on the list and maybe help somebody else? Did that ever cross your mind?
Well, I joke that, I had a second transplant after that. We'll get into that. But, if ever people want to take my organs, they're much younger because the liver... The donor organ I got was from a 19-year-old young kid who got killed in a motor vehicle accident. So,
wow.
Yeah.
And so, but you had a second transplant later on. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. We don't know why, but a few years later, they found that I had developed high blood pressure and my kidneys were failing. And I was working full-time. I did everything, but I started on blood pressure medicine, and I found that I couldn't handle a lot of blood pressure medicines because of allergies to a certain class of medicines called calcium channel blockers. And so the only thing that I could take was something called beta blockers and clonidine. Clonidine is given to people who are, you know, recovering from heroin, things like that. So those were the only two medicines that I know was very high doses. One of the side effects was it makes you dopey, sleepy. And the only way I could function during the day and do everything was drink enormous amounts of caffeine. So I would drink a lot of coffee and work. And then in 2008, in March, I came down with the flu. And that was the first time I was ever hospitalized with any kind of sickness. And I was in the I was at Muhlenberg Medical Center at that time. I was hospitalized for 3 days. I was very dehydrated, and my kidneys really took a beating. And then again, I had registered with Pittsburgh. And within 2 months, again, they called me. And again, they did something experimental. They gave me something called monoclonal antibody. And I was in the hospital, and within 3 days, I was discharged. And that was in 2008.
Wow. How about that? For you, Oscar, Dr. Matthews here said he had a six-month wait to receive that first liver. Is that a typical wait time? Does it really, is every kind of case individual as to what the wait time will be for someone who's on the list?
It's on an individual base, and it's based on several factors. One is how sick the person is, how they match, because they have to match by cell type. In other words, your histocompatibility, and also how long they've been waiting. So everybody gets a different set of points on the list. For the case of liver, it goes by what we call a MEL score, which takes into consideration lab values of the patient and such. So 6 months for Dr. Matthews to wait, it's amazing that he got it so quickly. And probably it was due to those factors that I mentioned prior.
Oh, okay. And is a second transplant, if someone is a recipient of an organ, do you kind of keep an eye on them and maybe they're going to need another transplant at some point? Or is it kind of like for some people, it's once it's done, you're good. You should be good to go.
Well, usually the first transplant is done and that's it. But due to the anti-rejection medications that are given, so they don't reject the actual organ, sometimes other organs take a hit and they are required to need another transplant.
Okay. So you want to give the website again and some more information about that where people can find out more about this process? I'm really fascinated by how the whole thing works.
Actually, I do want to mention, first of all, that April is Donate Life Month.
Yes, of course. Right.
So we are celebrating the gift of life throughout the month of April. And to that end, I just wanted to make the public aware that the Sharing Network has 3 5K walks during the year to raise awareness about organ and tissue donation. And the first one is going to happen this coming Sunday, April 24th, at the Bergen Community College in Paramus. The next one is in New Providence at our headquarters, and that's June 5th. And then the third one is August 21 at the Brookdale Community College in Lincroft, New Jersey. For more information, you can visit our website, which is www.newjerseysharingnetwork.org.
All right, sounds good. We're going to come back. We have one more segment to go in the show today. We'll talk more with Oscar Colon coming up, who is a clinical donation specialist with the Sharing Network, and more with Dr. Cecil Matthews, who is also our special guest here today. And you are listening to JFK Spotlight on Health. Stick around. Much more coming up.
Honey, I'm going to the store. The S-T-O-R-E. Never mind.
At the JFK Center for Audiology, we understand how difficult it can be when someone you love has hearing loss. At JFK Medical Center, our experts can identify your hearing loss using advanced diagnostic testing, develop a plan of action to improve your hearing, and offer you the latest technology in advanced digital hearing aids. Take the first step to better hearing and a better quality of life. Call 732-321-7063 to schedule your comprehensive hearing evaluation. That's 732-321-7063. Or visit us at jfkaudiology.org.
We're back for one final segment on JFK Spotlight on Health. My guests this week, we have Dr. Cecil Matthews, who is here with us today. And we also have the clinical donation specialist with the Sharing Network, New Jersey Sharing Network. We have Oscar Colon, who is also on the program today. Dr. Matthews, you had mentioned in the last segment there about yourself being a two-time organ recipient. And you a doctor. Being a doctor, did this help you at all in the process? Were you able to kind of understand the process and understand things a little better? Being a doctor yourself, did that kind of work in your favor?
Well, knowledge is power. And so being in medicine, and especially my area of infectious disease, I take a special interest in post-transplant infections, which are very common. And as far as JFK goes, I participate a lot in end-of-life issues with different patients and family meetings as a physician advisor. And it helps me to bring my perspective to, because you walked that road before, to help with families' end-of-life decisions. And I would emphasize that signing that driver's license card is so supremely important. We just recently had a case of an employee at JFK who lost his son suddenly, who passed away. And he had already signed the life donor card, and this was up in North Jersey, and they were able to immediately contact Sharing Network and get the ball in rolling. And by the time he went to the hospital, everything was in place. And when he passed, they were able to harvest the organs, and many, many lives were saved.
Wow. Like Dr. Matthews said here, Oscar, signing that card is everything. It kind of starts the entire process. And time, of course, is such an important component of the donation process. Time is really everything. And when you have that very narrow window, there's a lot of action that needs to be required right from the get-go, correct?
Correct. But one of the things that it's interesting to point out with the driver's license is that the biggest myth out there is that people think that if you put it on your driver's license, they're not going to treat you for your injuries. If you're involved in a car accident, for instance, that they're just going to remove your organs. That is totally untrue, because what the EMS or the medical personnel at the hospital do is first to try to save your life. They're not looking at your driver's license to see, oh, this is an organ donor or not. So that's a big myth that we are trying to debunk in society in general.
Why anybody would think a medical professional would be that unethical in the first place? I don't know how that got started, Dr. Oscar. It's probably one of the craziest urban legends I've ever heard in my life. And I am familiar. I have heard that before. But let's talk a little bit more about separating reality from myth with organ donation. Any other misconceptions you can clarify?
Well, the other one is that people think that their religion does not endorse organ donation as the ultimate sacrifice to save another human being, when in reality, all major religions endorse donation as an unselfish gift to another human being. Even the religions that we think might not do it, leave it up to our individual decision for the family to decide.
Is this something that you would encourage young people, middle age, the elderly? Who do you want to see sign up for this program?
Well, we would like everybody to sign up to become an organ and tissue donor. There is no upper age limit for organ donation, and there's no lower age limit either. It could be from newborns that have suffered a traumatic event to an elderly person who had just passed away. So in terms of age, there's no age restrictions. Another myth that people have out there is, oh, you know, if they take the organs or the tissues, they're mutilating the body. One thing that I would like to stress out and point is that we take care of our donors with dignity and respect. This is the ultimate sacrifice, that somebody is giving life to another human being. So we are very ethical when it comes to that, to the point where we always, when we are retrieving the organs from the donor, we have what is called a moment of silence. And this is an honor for the person who is about to give the gifts.
I have heard that before. I've had the privilege of meeting some of the specialists and some of the surgeons who are just amazing, amazing people. And it's incredible the way the entire process is done. It really is. Oscar, is the New Jersey Sharing Network involved some sort of national network where everybody sort of works together on a national level? Any involvement of that at the New Jersey level?
Yes, actually, we are involved. We are part of the UNO system, which is the United Network for Organ Sharing. They are the federally charged entity that oversees transplantation in the United States. So every time we have a donor, we have to enter the donor's information into the national database. And based on the previous information I gave you of how recipients are chosen, is how the organs are allocated. So we could have a donor in New Jersey, and even though primarily we try to keep the organs in New Jersey, then we go regionally if we can't find a recipient in New Jersey, and then nationally.
Very good. We have about a minute left. Oscar, any final thoughts that you want to leave us with as we wrap up today's show?
I would like to thank JFK for allowing us to be in this spot and talk about this important topic, and at the same time for people to talk about donation in their house. You know, when they're having dinner or when they go to the DMV, sign up to be an organ donor. It doesn't cost anything. And think about what a hero you could become if you happen to die, unfortunately, to somebody else.
Exactly. And for you, Dr. Matthews, thank you again for sharing your story on the show today. Any final thoughts from you as we wrap up?
I think, again, as Oscar said, education is the key, not only to the general public, but also to people in the medical profession and nursing profession on how to approach this whole thing with a dignity and professionalism. And that, to me, is very important, too.
Very good. Great to have both of you on the program today, Dr. Cecil Matthews and Oscar Colon. Great to see you as
well. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your time today. I am Burt Barron. I want to thank you so much for listening to JFK Spotlight on Health. And until next time, you have a healthy day.